It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Money for Lunch. You know what? It's a funny thing sometimes when we do a show like this, meaning a show that is
out of our control a lot of times. Why? Because we third-party the show through Blog Talk. It's syndicated on iHeartRadio. It's syndicated on numerous other platforms. The challenge that we're having today is that Blog Talk's acting a little weird. I can't see everything that I usually can see. In fact, instead of dialing through normal means, for lack of better terms, I'm having to dial in through my my phone. And so it's just one of those things, right? It's not a whole lot you can do about it. Now, here's the deal. This could be a gift. I just don't know it yet, right? Now, sometimes we get upset when things don't go our way. When technology refuses to act the way it should. So my choice is I could get upset about it, or I can take this opportunity to get better at it. Can we set up a system when this happens again in the future that we have a different workaround? That's the opportunity. There's the gift, at least one of them. And all right, we're going to get this party started here shortly, just trying to work out the bugs here. And but anyway, so the reality is we all have problems. And we have been brainwashed sometimes to believe that problems are bad. And I say that they're not. They're a chance for us to get better. They're a chance for us to expand and to grow. And not that we, you know, and again, growth itself can be painful, right? I mean, that's just the reality that we live in. In order for us to have the life that we want, we have to grow. Grow is not without pain.
You have to be aware of your mindset. You have to be aware of what motivates you. You have to be aware of how emotions impact you. All those things come into play.
And so any minute now, we're going to have our first guest on the show. And I appreciate everybody's patience as we get things squared away, as we get the bugs worked out. But that's, you know, that's the great thing about doing a live show is that if something can go wrong, it certainly will go wrong, right? I mean, that's just life in general, though.
So we're going to just stay tuned, everybody. We're trying to get this worked out.
And if not, well, it'll just be a monologue show today, and we'll have to get everybody else to come back another time.
That's just the way it is. Hold on, everybody. We're trying to get you there.
All right, looks like my engineers are working something out.
And we're trying to make things happen. So Larry just sent me a text. He's on the line, him in Sherry. And so, good guys, stand by. We're trying to make things happen here. Ta-ta-ta-da! And all right, so the first quarter of the year is about done. We have just a couple of days left. Some of you guys are going, man, this is the best quarter ever. And some of you guys, the majority, are saying this quarter wasn't as good as we had wanted it to be. And guess what? You are 100% in control of that. You can make it happen, and you can decide exactly what kind of quarter you want to have next. All right. The good folks there at we're getting some headway there. Let's see. Looks like things are happening. I don't want to get my hopes up too high yet, but let's see if we can make it happen with our first guest, Larry Shaliga. And let's see.
Jackie Bashir.
Larry, are you there?
Bert, I can hear you.
Larry,
fine.
You there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, great. Yep.
I am here.
Sounds great. Great. And then we have Sherry Bashir. Jackie Bashir. I'm sorry.
Jackie Bashir.
Excellent. And Jackie, are you there? She's not there.
Okay, I'll send her a text. But in the meantime,
yeah,
Bert, I was
text.
Listening to you
okay.
chatter on. I never thought I'd find you at a loss for words trying to fill space. But that was good. But it reminded me, you and I were in Columbus recently.
Yes.
Okay, Jackie can hear us, but we can't hear her. You and I were in Columbus recently, and the piece that you were talking about, you know, what do you do when things go wrong? If you remember, Bill Cashmere was on stage
yes.
at the induction ceremonies for the International Sports Hall of Fame, and he said that who you are really depends not on how you behave when things go right, but what you do when things go wrong. And he gave the example of Bill Cashmere was, what, 3 times world champion, world's strongest man?
Yes.
Right? And he said
yeah,
that in
yeah.
one competition, he was doing a deadlift, and at about 700 pounds, he tore his thigh muscle in his left leg. And everybody thought
That's
he was
right.
done, but he taped it up and whacked at 900 pounds, tore the muscle in his right leg, and taped it up and went on to set a world's record and win the competition at 1,200 pounds.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Remember that?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's exactly what you were talking about. It's not whether things always go right or wrong. It's how you react when they do go wrong.
Right, because the reality is things are not always going to go right. I mean, look, here are the stats. The Hall of Famers in baseball fail 70% of the time. Now, it goes to show you how large the room for error is, right? In the sense that we can fail 70% of the time and still be incredibly successful. And so I think what happens is a lot of people don't even dare. They don't give themselves permission to fail. And they stay stuck, right? They stay stuck with their song unplayed or however that adage goes. And it's amazing. It's amazing to me that in life we can fail a good portion of our lives and still end up with an incredible success story. The guy from Kentucky Fried Chickens, Marlon Sanders, is another, we call it real life example of that. Steve Jobs, he failed a lot, got kicked out of his own company, and still leaves a massive legacy behind. Walt Disney failed, at least filed bankruptcy 7 times, and still left an unbelievable legacy that has now gone on for almost 100 years.
Yep. So I think right all those things, and it comes down to do you accept it as a failure, or do you look at it as a challenge and opportunity to do something different, something better?
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, the gift is in the problem, right? And it's like you're saying, it's what we do with it, right? And so can we be better prepared? Can we do a workaround? And this is, by the way, one of our workarounds, because this has happened before. And so it's just the challenge, the excitement of doing a live show. Sometimes things go haywire, and it's just the way it is. But you know what? Let's get into this. I want to talk about some of the other stuff. And some of the things that you and I talked about over this Columbus weekend is that the management skills needed, for example, to manage a $1 million company versus a $10 million company, you know, versus a $100 million company are basically the same, but they're not the same skills needed to make the jump in growth from, the 10 million mark to the 100 million mark. In other words, the management skills stay the same, but the leadership skills change is what I meant to say, right? And so let's talk about that. Let's talk about the skills that you need to take your company from, let's say, 1 million to 10 million or 10 million to 100 million, whatever the case may be, or maybe your company's just brand new and it's only doing $100,000 a year and you need to, bring it up to a million. Wherever you are at, the management skills more or less stay the same, but the leadership skills change, and I want to talk about that. So let's start off with, let's say the skills to influence, inspire, engage your people. Let's talk about these skills, because these are really the skills. I mentioned Steve Jobs. Here's a guy that wasn't always liked, but he had diehard followers. He had a great leadership skills. He had the ability to influence, inspire, and engage his people as well as his customers, and therefore he was able to succeed even though he wasn't always the nicest guy to work with.
I've heard some stories. Bert, I'm going to check real quick. Jackie says she called in again.
Okay.
Jackie, can you hear us?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me turn her mic on.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Okay.
Jackie, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
All right.
Oh, my goodness.
Excellent. So
hi,
we
Jackie.
Have everybody here.
Oh, hi. The excitement of live on the air.
Live on the air. It should be, live, maybe live. So let's talk about this, Jackie, because you worked specifically with Larry. Larry was one of your clients. Now you guys are working together. And so let's talk about the leadership skills, which, Larry and I were laughing about this in Columbus when we got together, because, again, these are considered the soft skills. But these skills are the difference between a $10 million company and a $100 million company or even a billion-dollar company. So I want to talk about some of these skills, the skills to influence, inspire, and engage your people as well as your customers. And so, let's get started with your mindset and maybe got to go from there. And so talk about that a little bit.
So it's funny. It's funny that we call these the soft skills, because I always say that's the hardest stuff you will ever have to do. Learning a spreadsheet is so much easier than learning how to navigate the different personalities that you're working with, the individual versus the collective. And I'm a believer that mindset is really at the root of everything, because it really is that invisible force inside of you that allows you to take, as you said, whether you define something as a problem or you define something as a failure, or if you define it as it's just another step in the process of success. And so a lot of it is really in how do we look at what's happening, how do we perceive it. And I'm a believer that we have to develop that. It's not, we don't all come from a place that necessarily teaches that. And so mindset is developed by, it's a mixture of nature and nurture. And so surrounding yourself by people that help influence the way you perceive situations – There's a whole body of research around whether we allow our feelings to dictate what happens or we allow what's external to dictate what our response is to a situation or to a success or a failure.
Absolutely.
And you know, and
Jackie,
I want to add this.
When you do your seminars, you – go ahead, Bert.
No. Well, I just wanted to quickly add, and I wanted to throw in there because something that you said, and this is why they're called skills, is that because, you know, you can train people to have the right mindset. You can train people to be good leaders. You can train people. These are skills that some of us have on, you know, obviously on different levels, but that's why they're skills, because you can train them up. Anyway, go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, one of the things that Jackie talks about frequently is when you talk in terms of mindset, there are really two types of mindset. One is a fixed mindset, where you're constantly comparing yourself to other people. And the second one is a growth mindset, where, yeah, the other people are there, but you're really focused on what can you do better? What can you learn? How can you do it better, faster, stronger? It's not a competition with the other person. It's working to the best of your ability. Did I do that right, Jackie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me give you a sitting ovation, Larry. I mean, so if I can just add to that. So a lady named Carol Dweck out of Stanford, I think it was in the 70s and 80s, did a lot of research around mindset and continues to publish a lot of research around mindsets. And her research found essentially there are two kinds of mindsets. A fixed mindset, which essentially is someone who believes that skill, talent, ability is inherent. You either have it or you don't. And you see that with people that you'll see someone say, you know, I'm not good at technology. So they don't even try. They don't even give it the attempt. Versus someone with a growth mindset. And someone with a growth mindset believes that skill, intelligence, ability, it's something that can be cultivated. That you can't ever really know somebody's potential because it all comes from effort. So even though you might have an aptitude for certain things, that if you put the time and the energy and the effort, that you can develop things that maybe you never thought you could. And oftentimes we see that in a workspace. So you'll see someone who maybe doesn't like to take on a challenge, you know, or
right.
When they receive feedback, they maybe get defensive and they take it as a personal affront rather than how can I use this to help build whatever skill I want or to get to whatever goal I want. And then you see others that are able to take the feedback and say, you know, maybe it didn't feel good. I might not have even agreed with it, but is there anything in there for me to at least consider? And then can use that to help develop whatever it is that they want to develop. And so you can oftentimes in a workplace, you can that really will differentiate who ends up succeeding, even when the business skill sets are identical and possibly they have the same graduate degrees and the same training, and one will do very well and the other won't do as well. And often if you unpack it, it'll really get to the mindset that each of the people bring.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So as a
you
typical
know,
example. Might be where the when you started the show, Bert, we had some technical problems. You could have sat
yes.
back and said, oh, well, oh, poor me. Looks like we're not going to have a show today. It's not working. There's nothing I can do. Instead, you said, okay, we have an opportunity here to learn. What kind of workaround can we do? What can we do now? And what's going to happen in the future? How can we learn from this? Totally different mindset. Which person would you rather follow? The one that would sit back and said, well, we're screwed, we're done, or the person who's, hey, we can work this to our advantage. We'll find a workaround.
Right.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to be very transparent, I almost gave up. It's like it was taking so long. It's like, come on, man, you guys.
It's not in your makeup, my friend.
But you know what? And here's the deal. And this is why I didn't give up. But like I said, I was thinking about it, just to be transparent. It's because this is not the first time we've had a technical snafu. It's happened before. Why? Because we don't, you know, even when you control all the moving parts, things can go awry. That's just what, you know, it's just what it is. But it is all about the mindset. And when you look at the mindset, how important this one skill is, back to what Jackie was saying, you have two people with more or less the exact same, let's say, skills, same degrees, same experiences, but the difference between one and the other is that mindset. And, you know, there's so many examples of that. And it just goes to show you that the soft skills, and I love what Jackie said, it, you know, they're called soft skills, but they're really the hardest skills to learn. And it's interesting to me that here we are in almost 2020, and these soft skills are still being downplayed or not taken as seriously. And people are always amazed. You know, like Zappos, the shoe company, people are blown away that this company, you know, did what it did. And Tony Hsieh says that the reason they were able to do what they did is because they competed on customer service and not price. And so Zappos is not about the cheapest shoes. It's about the best customer experience. And then, of course, they were acquired by Amazon. And Amazon now calls itself, you know, the most customer-centric company in the world. That is their whole, that's their whole thing, is to give this outrageous customer service. It's just a different mindset. It has nothing to do with money. It has nothing to do with technology. It has to do with the mindset.
You know, Bert, if I could,
exactly.
If I could chime in on something. One, we talk about these things as an abstract concept oftentimes, and the thing that I think is really important to hit home is that, because oftentimes when I do a workshop, people will say, well, how do you change your mindset? I mean, it just seems like such an ominous thing to be thinking about something one way all your life, and then all of a sudden you're saying, okay, how do I shift this? And one of the things that I like to talk about if I'm doing a workshop or if I'm working one-on-one with a client is that it starts with small steps. It starts with recognizing the thought patterns that maybe are keeping us hung up. And I will often say if I'm doing a workshop, you know, I will share where I myself have tripped, that to sort of invite other people in. And similarly to what Larry talks about, is I had reached a point in my career where I just wasn't moving, and I didn't know why. And people that were coming in into the organization after I were moving ahead, and I, you know, I had gone to the boss and I said, you know, is there something else I should be doing? And he said, no, you're doing fine. And so he couldn't really give me anything. And I sat down one day and I said, I'm going to do a rigorous self-inventory. That's what I called it, a self-inventory. And I identified two or three people that were doing really, really well in the organization. And I said, I'm going to look at what is it that they bring to the organization. And then I looked at myself and I said, okay, what are the strengths I bring, and how do I measure up compared to these others? And I saw places where they were really stepping it up in ways that, had I not sat down to do this, I don't think I would have noticed it. And it was about 6 months later that I was promoted and my career really, really took off. And so I share that because it isn't like one day you have a mindset and the next day you can change it. It does take effort. And it starts with the willingness to really examine not the external forces, because we can all find reasons why things aren't working the way we want them to work. But looking at ourselves, what are we doing and how are we contributing? And I loved when you started, when you said, you know, it's about the life you want to lead. Oftentimes when I'm coaching people, I'll ask the question, what is the life you want and what are you willing to do for that life? And so I like to bring in how we can take small steps toward the big changes that we might want to see as it relates to the way we lead others or as it relates to the way we lead our own lives.
If I might add to that,
I like
Jackie,
that.
when you and I were working together, when in a coach and client relationship, as you know, my career was in a downward spiral. I was suffering, and we worked for a while, and the big change for me in my mindset was I was focused on and committed to doing whatever it took for me to be successful in my career. And I wasn't. I was failing. When I changed that mindset over time to what do I have to do to make those around me successful, my career skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm. You know, and
so
what's interesting about
for
that...
For me, the basic change was... Go ahead.
I was going to say, what's interesting about that is the... This is a very spiritually strategy. It's a very spiritual strategy. Mm-hmm. If you want to be uplifted, you go about uplifting others first,
mm-hmm.
right? If
mm-hmm.
you want to feel loved, you go and love other people by giving them service. Well, mm-hmm. you know, and that's almost what it sounds like to me, Larry, that you took the focus off yourself and you put it on other people. They started to grow and change, which gave you fulfillment, which allowed you to grow and change.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, there were times Jackie was doing some work with the company that I work at, and the related transformation, if you will, was I went from someone who was known as the most hated man in the company to someone who was known as someone they could trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, that felt really good, especially when Jackie called up and said, hey, you ought to hear what these guys are saying about you.
You know, it's
yeah, I think
that's
can't
thing
trust
about
them.
That.
If you trust your leader, you can't trust them.
Right.
The other thing, too, Bert, if I can piggyback on that for one second, is I think another really important piece of the puzzle is that nobody finds success alone. And oftentimes I'll find with working with people is we always say, you know, you're only as sick as your secrets, or you're only as successful as you are willing to be open. And what Larry's talking about, and I think as we're talking about the different leaders, that nobody gets to that place alone. And so some of it is recognizing that you want something to change. So that maybe the intent that you have isn't having the impact that you want. And then what are the steps to move it toward the direction you want? And so it's all a growth opportunity.
Yeah, I like that. Hey, guys, we're out of time, so I'm going to end on that note, and I love that. It's all a growth opportunity. It's all mindset. And it's amazing because, you know, there were three or four things that we were going to talk about, but it just goes to show you how important the mindset is. We literally talked for 20 minutes on the mindset, and we could probably do another hour on the mindset. It's such an important element of our success. Jackie Beshear, I want to say thank you for you to stopping by, and Larry, as always, it's good to have you on the show. Larry Shaliga, everybody. Larry, we'll talk to you soon. In fact, you're going to be visiting with me in Phoenix. Looking forward to that. So we'll talk to both of you guys later.
Thank you. Take care. Sounds good, Bert.
Thanks a lot. Take care, buddy.
You bet. Good stuff there from Larry Shaliga and Jackie Beshear on mindset. And we're going to take a quick, ever so quick commercial break because we got to pay some bills. And then we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest is a local Phoenix, company called Chess Emporium, and Scott Fretno is here with us, and he is from the Chess Emporium. You can find out more about the Chess Emporium at chessemporium.com. Scott Fredino, 25 years as founder of Chess Emporium, a scholastic chess teaching organization, serving his company as CEO and as professional chess coach, managing 60 chess coach plus staff, has served Phoenix Metro children and families since 1993. Scott Fredino, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
You bet. All right, so I got to ask you because I love chess. And so it sounds like Chess Emporium, is it specifically for children? I mean, what are the ages that you cater to?
Our primary market bird is 5 to 12-year-olds.
Gotcha.
Okay, 5 to 12-year-olds. And you know what? The things that you learn from chess is applicable to sports. It's applicable to business. It's applicable to so many areas of life, right?
Yes, sir.
And you know what, I think, and I want to get your input on this. I know when I started teaching my kids how to play chess, it really gave them, it helped them out in math. It gave them some logic skills that normally you don't have at a young age. Have you seen that with your kids?
Yes, sir. Most families and most parents who haven't really played the game, other than moving the pieces a few times, they look at chess and they go, well, this can't be bad. He's going to learn how to add and subtract. Maybe he'll learn how to concentrate. Hopefully he'll find a social group if he's not athletic. And maybe this will be good for him. And the real gains are not the cognitive skills. It's the non-cognitive characteristics that can be fostered from playing the game. Most people have never played a 2 or 3 hour game. But even our 5, 6, and 7-year-olds are playing games at that length pretty early in their career of studying the game. And they're learning a lot more important things than those cognitive skills that you initially think of, such as self-control, accountability for the decisions you make and the consequences that occur, what happens to the resources that you were gifted, and are you careless with those? It helps develop willpower, tenacity, grit. Delayed gratification is a very important non-cognitive skill set that can be fostered with chess. You want it now, but if you're not cautious and use forethought, the consequences are going to be disastrous for you. Pattern recognition,
yes,
is inherent in chess too. Do you keep doing the same things over and coming to the same bad results, or do you adopt changes in what your patterns are and look for ones that end up with positive results?
Yeah, I love that. You know, and one of the things, one of the skills that I think that you learn, which is an amazing skill for young people, and that is patience. Because when you are sitting there waiting for your opponent, you know, you have to be patient. And you mentioned, you know, being focused and you know, so it's an amazing set of skills that people that young people learn from chess. It's a great thing. And then, you know, you mentioned also that there's a social aspect of it, and sometimes people don't think about that. But you know, when I was part of the chess club, one of the things that I learned early on was how to shake a hand,
mm-hmm.
which sounds silly, but you know, I don't know if you guys do this, but when I was in school, you know, every match was started by shaking a hand, which,
correct,
again, when you're 10, 11, 12 years old, even 15 years old, how often do you shake hands with somebody, especially a peer, which is, you know,
mm-hmm,
seldom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, when you say patience, it equates to self-control, and self-control is,
yes,
one of the greatest factors in life success. And, you know,
yes,
when you do shake the hand, this is just the first step to learning how to be emotionally intelligent in a group under an intense pressure. If you're playing in a tournament with 200, 300 children and your mom and dad are outside and the coach is hovering and your teammates want you to win because they want the trophy on the stage, there's a lot of emotional, social pressure. And we try to educate the parents that the result isn't important. The effort is. Conscientious effort at picking yourself up when you fall down, child build a positive self-image and redefining what avenues he has and what his potential can be, rather than sitting in a, like you said, a fixed mindset in your past, guest. We want them to have a growth mindset that they can be more than maybe their parents have told them they could be.
Sure. Absolutely. All right, so let's talk about this. Speaking of kids, how many kids do you currently work with, teach?
Well, for the fall and spring school year, and at the three we have three locations in the city, one in Tempe, one in North Scottsdale, and one in North Phoenix. We'll probably teach over 6,000 children this year.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. I love that. All right, so let me ask you this. How big is the Chess Emporium? In other words, is it a one-location facility? Is it multiple locations?
Well, we actually serve 17 different districts and over 330 over 330 schools in the Phoenix metro area. And we have three brick-and-mortar locations, as I mentioned, you know, earlier. And they're open in the evenings and weekends because this is when our customers are available.
Man, 17 districts. And what was that, 360 what?
Over 300 schools in the city.
Wow, that is amazing. That is amazing.
The parents bring their children to the centers for secondary learning opportunities in chess, chess for life classes, practice nights, Friday night rated action tournaments. We run 24 to 27 Saturday tournaments with 200 to 350 children competing on Saturdays across the city. And we have to rent high schools for those because our centers are around 2,000 square feet.
Man, that is just amazing.
You know, and so it goes to show you the impact that you're having. 25 years you've been doing this. Now you're in these 17 districts working with over 300 schools. This is amazing. And let's talk a little bit about your staff. Are they primarily volunteers? Do they all get paid? Talk about your staff a little bit.
Yeah, we do no volunteer work. Every person gets paid for his work. So if we don't do good work, we shouldn't be charging. And we don't want to make our customers happy. We want to make them raving fans. Parents are our
Ooh,
customers,
I like that.
And the children are our students. But if we run fun and engaging classes where the coaches respect and show the same type of love and concern they would for their own offspring, those children go home and they talk about the chess coach and they say, Mom, I want to show Dad what I learned today. I want to play chess, and I want to show you what Coach Scott taught me. And he becomes our salesman to the parent. And
sure.
They actually are a very minor number of parents that will try chess, pay money for a stranger to teach your child in a chess after-school program. It's roughly, you know, 4 to 7% depending on the school you're at. But they don't really have a full understanding of what they bought. And they can double, triple, quintuple the power of the lessons if they take a little bit further step and let the child play one time with the team. And when parents walk into these tournaments, they're expecting 40 or 60 kids, and they walk in, there's 300 children, everything's organized, and they're more, you know, they're completely overwhelmed. But we want to make sure that every parent knows that that child is important, and every school knows this is the only school we have.
Man, that's amazing. I like that attitude because that's really the right attitude. You know, and I like what you said there. First of all, you have to do good work, and the kid is maybe your primary customer, but the parents are your secondary customer, and his feedback will determine how long that kid stays in that, you know, with the Chess Emporium. And if you're doing good work and the kid's engaged, he's going to be there for a long time.
Well, parents want a positive. These type the parents that are spending, you know, $150, $200 to put a child into a 14-hour course over maybe 16 weeks, those parents are looking for other educational opportunities that the general curriculum in the school does not offer. And, you know, with a lot of the arts and a lot of the music being cut out of the budgets, chess will never be added. So these are parent-funded programs. And none of the districts are paying us money to teach these children. They're receiving a rake on the top of the tuition. And so they want us to have a lot of children because they need the revenue and they want their children to learn well. And there's a lot of failed parenting techniques that parents are employing simply because they haven't gone through parenting classes and it's their first time around. And so we're often struggling to give them the skill sets that the screens and the TV are taking away. We're looking for prolonged effort, and we're looking to help them redefine what they're doing with their time. And we're hoping to give the parents some thought about, hey, maybe I could use some of this for his future. And because this is a long-term view we take, there's a high school chess club, there's a college chess club, and as an adult, you can play in nationally rated tournaments. Our children's play in the state championship. They go to the Best of Phoenix City championships. And hundreds of them go to nationals.
That's amazing. All right, so let me ask you this. Somebody's listening to this and they're going, wow, this sounds great, but, you know, my kids never played chess. You guys have a beginning program or a beginner's program?
Absolutely. You know, our strength is K-1 and 2. We have children starting as early as 4.5. And when a 5-year-old... when a child that's 5 years and 2 months can beat his dad who played chess in high school, there's an eye-opening moment for the parent. I didn't know he could do this. We often hear that. I didn't know he could sit there that long. And they're being fed hours and hours on screens, and the screens are hyperlinking, and you develop the type of brain that you're going to have in life early. It's still plastic. You can redefine your brain, but you want to give your brain a chance to sit there and have prolonged effort and prolonged study and prolonged willpower.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? What's so interesting is one of the benefits that I saw, and it wasn't right away, but the reason my kids learned how to play chess is because that was the only game that my dad would play with us. And he's an avid chess player. He's the kind of chess player that would have, you know, he would have two or three games going on in his study, and you know, and he's competing in a, you know, with you know, some of the what do you call it, some of the chess masters via book, and then later on when you could do that with a computer, he was just amazed. But anyway, so bottom line is, I remember the first time that I connected chess to one of my kids' accomplishments, and it was something really simple, but he had found this video game, and this video game had no directions. He had found it, he put it on the put it in the computer, and he started messing with it, and he was able to unlock this game and figure it out. And again, this is he didn't have tons of direction. But he specifically said, I just look at it as a chess game. And he was able to make small moves here and there. And sometimes, like in chess, you know, you make a move and it doesn't work out to your favor, and then sometimes you do. But at that time, he must have been 10 or 11 or 12. So it has, like you said, it has this ability to teach our kids patience or self-control, discipline in a way. It's an amazing thing, and I want to give your website out one more time here as we wrap this up, chessemporium.com, and you can reach out to Scott and his team, and he'll be glad to guide you or help you out. Scott, this has been so much fun, and I'm so happy that you stopped by and to help us understand what Chess Emporium is all about. And and love to maybe catch up with you down the road and maybe watch one of your events in live.
Yep, absolutely. Be invited, and just, you know, you have my number and such. Just let me tell the parents that you don't have to jump in and sign up and sign contracts.
Scott?
You can say, hey, I'd kind of like to just take hour and
we lost
have
Scott?
You a chess assessment.
All right. Well, good stuff there from Scott Fretno from Chess Emporium. And looking forward to meeting him in person and watching one of the tournaments live. I think that would be amazing to watch what happens. So anyway, guys, we appreciate everybody dealing with our little weirdness today, our little technical snafus. We appreciate you guys being a loyal listener. Tell your friends. And also, what is taking you so long? You need to subscribe my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Burt Martinez, youtube.com/Burt J. Martinez, and it'll get you there. And we appreciate you as always. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.